This is The Guardian.
In stories throughout history, seeing your doppelganger is usually a bad sign. Evil twins, doubles who try to take over your life, mysterious strangers in cases of mistaken identity. Thankfully, in real life, finding your doppelganger is a lot more fun. TikTok videos featuring the word doppelganger have over 3 billion views. There are plenty of apps that give you your celebrity lookalike. Mine are obviously Angelina Jolie, Keira Knightley, and Emma Stone. You get the picture. And now facial recognition software means you can even find an actual double.
The probability is extremely high that you have somebody that looks almost identical to you. You have a very weird face, then it's more difficult to find a lookalike.
Either way, the thing about doppelgangers is that despite looking almost identical, they aren't biologically related to us. So what does make them appear so similar? How do totally different people end up with the same face? And can studying doppelgangers tell us anything about the age-old question of nature versus nurture? From The Guardian, I'm Madeline Finlay. No, I'm Madeline Finlay. And this is Science Weekly. Professor Manel Estella, you're director of the Josep Carreras Leukemia Institute and chairman of genetics at the University of Barcelona. Tell me, what got you interested in doppelgangers?
We have been studying for a long time what's more important, what we inherit from our parents or what we do in our lives. It's this discussion about nature and nurture that has never been solved and, of course, probably will never be solved. But years ago, we showed, for example, that twins, real twins, monozygotic twins, they have the same genetics, but different epigenetics, different regulation of DNA, how it's controlled. So we thought, what about people that they look the same, but they're not twins? What they share? Why they had similar faces? And that was the start of our research.
One thing that I did wonder was how you recruited the participants for your study, because we're not just talking about, oh, you know, you look a little bit like my friend. I've seen some of the pictures. These are people who really do look almost identical.
The study has taken a lot of time. So we started this more than 7 years ago, and the study was published just last year. That time was very different than right now. Right now, people can look online using different apps, trying to find your lookalike person, your twin, and using Instagram and other approaches. But at that time, 7 years ago, this was not so popular. So what I decided to do was to contact a photographer that was taking pictures of this lookalike from an artistic view, okay, just for art. And I called him and said, I have a scientific interest to know what's going on with these people. Can you help me to contact these guys? And this is how we started the study.
And how similar did they have to be classed as doppelgangers? Because, you know, like I said, to me, they looked really similar. But was there some way that you classified the similarity between these people?
We took the pictures of the faces and they were run using three different software recognitions of the face. These are the same softwares that are used, for example, by police or in the airport to open the gate to go in the plane. So from this, we were able to highlight those look-alike that really were the most look-alike, those that really were almost identical.
And as you started researching this, what kind of questions were you looking to answer? What were you expecting to see?
We took a very naive approach to say, let's study everything that we can in these humans and let's see what the data tell us. So we used biological samples from all these people around the world and we studied three components. One is the genome, that's the DNA sequence. The other is called the epigenome, that are the chemical marks that regulate the genome. And the third one was the microbiome, is the type of bacteria and viruses that these people may have. And let's see how much and which type of these components are shared by these people.
So you were looking at their genes, their epigenetics, and their microbiome. What did you find in these pairs?
Well, we found that those look-alike that were the most similar, they share a higher number of genetic variants. The genetic variants regulate the activity of our genes, and they make us a little bit more slim or fat or tall or short, etc. So in these cases, the look-alike couples, they were paired together using only this genetic variation. So they really are like a little bit like if they were twins, real twins.
So approximately how many genes were people sharing? What percentage of our genome would have to be shared between people for faces to look similar?
This is always a very difficult question to answer, because the definition of look-alike depends of a percentage. So monozygotic twins, that 100% identical. So they have 100% of the genome identical. And if we look at look-alikes in our study, they share more than 50,000 points of information between them that are not shared with people that they are not look-alike. And these 50,000 genes, they mostly relate with features of the face.
And how is this happening? I mean, is it just kind of statistical chance that these people have similar genetics?
We look in detail about these look-alike couples, and you can go back generations, many generations in their past, and there's no family relation at all. So they're not family in any way. And what we're thinking is that they're able to share these positions in the genome just by random chance. And this happens because right now, we are a lot of people in the world. It's close to 8,000 million now. And our DNA has 6,000 million components. So the numbers are pretty similar. So by combination of these, you can create, just by random chance, as I said, individuals that share a lot of these variations.
And were you surprised by the result? Because, of course, it kind of does give you a bit of an insight into that nature versus nurture question.
Yeah, so because my field of expertise is mostly epigenetics, that relates about how the environment is talking to our cells, to our tissues. So I would love that it was epigenetics, but not. What clustered them together was really genetics. What we inherit from our father, from our mother, is really pushing us a lot.
But could it be that there are people out there who are genetically similar to us, but potentially their epigenetics have ended up different, so we look different enough that we would never have been spotted as doppelgangers?
Yes, and in fact, our study showed that they are clustered by genetics, but the difference that we can spot among them, they are associated with this difference in the epigenetic landscape and the microbiome profile. This really is what provides the difference. That's the reason they are not fully identical, okay? What they do in their lives is what really can create changes between them. And also this can be even greater as they age. After living 60, 70 years, we have a lot of exposition to many things in life, from smoking, contamination, different types of food, radiation, etc. And all of this probably helps to shape our face and many other things, of course, in our body.
Now, I'm really interested to know how the pairs of people reacted with their doppelgangers, because, of course, they'd had the photographs taken, so they must have met before, but were they surprised by their doppelgangers? How did they react to finding they even share DNA?
Yeah, so remember that these look-alike, they are from around the world, sometimes from different continents even, and many of them did not know before taking the picture. And when they meet each other with similar faces, there's almost a pretty instant connection about this. It's very similar to the connection that they have between twins. Sometimes they have a lot of things that they like to do together, etc. So the look-alike people, when they connect, they like each other, really, because they're liking themselves at the end.
So, Manel, what are the possible applications of this new understanding that we have?
There are two applications that are very interesting, and they are not science fiction. They are right now already starting to be worked out and applied. One is that now, for the first time, looking at DNA sequence, you can draw a face. So you can construct the face of somebody. This can have an important consequence for forensic medicine. Okay. So imagine you have a DNA from a crime and you don't know the suspect of this crime. So using this DNA, now you can build a face, okay, that can be useful for police and for agencies to solve many crimes. But you can also think the problem from the other side. Now from a face, from the picture of a face, you can infer part of the genome. So you can have an idea of the DNA of that person just looking at the face. And this can be useful in the screening of genetic disorders, for example. You can say, this person, maybe she or he has a genetic disease, and we can intercept the disorder before it has a clinical phenotype. So we can do some kind of preventive genetics medicine.
And could it be that the doppelgangers and doubles share anything outside of their physical appearance as well?
We have seen that this look-alike, they have other similarities beyond the shape of the face. Some relate to more complicated features, that some relate, for example, to behavior. And we have seen in the case of addiction, for example, to smoking and tobacco. And these people, they share also probably these genes that make them addict to behaviors like tobacco use, etc. Our study did not have the complete statistical power to address all the complex behavioral parameters, but at first look, others, like the use of right hand, left hand, even some crude numbers about the intelligence or these kind of things, there was some relation there. But I would like to highlight that this required more careful studies because this was not the main point of the study.
And of course, there would be innumerable ethical implications there and a very complex, you know, thing to do without bringing in all kinds of terrible biases.
Absolutely. So this type of studies that we do and others are doing, they never should be used for any profiling of humans. They're used for other interesting stuff. As I mentioned, they can be used to identify and solve crimes, all these mysteries. And the other way, we can use the face to help people to combat disorders, mainly genetic diseases, and this can happen in kids even.
So, Manel, given what you've learned here, I have to know, what's the probability that I'm going to have a doppelganger out there somewhere?
The probability is extremely high that you have somebody that looks almost identical to you. Not only one, probably several. Of course, all of us who have a face that is more or less average. So then it's more likely to have a lookalike. If you have a very weird face, then it's more difficult to find a lookalike.
And so what will you be looking at next?
Yeah, so this is an interesting question. One thing that we're trying to do in this question of nature versus nurture is to see if people that they have the same external factors, at the end there is some convergence and they start looking the same. So you can imagine this popular saying that people that are wed for 40 years, at the end they look the same, the husband and the wife. No? They have similar faces. So is this because they eat the same every day, because they have the same environment, etc.? There is a way that external factors are able to change or modify our phenotype, our features. So it's something that I would like to address.
Manel, thank you so much for coming on.
It has been a pleasure.
Thanks again to Professor Manel Estella. If you want to see some photos of the doppelgangers in the study, there's a link on the podcast webpage at theguardian.com. And that's it for today. The producer was Ned Carter-Miles, the sound design was by Joel Cox, and the executive producer was Ellie Bury. We'll be back on Thursday. See you then.
This is The Guardian.